New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the second episode of the 76 Reasons podcast. My name is Anthony Passiola. I'm joined here by my co-host, Jacob Moreno. We can just go ahead and jump straight into things today. Last episode, if you didn't see it, we recorded just before the Sixers' first game against the Hornets. So we can start by breaking down that game and all the ones after it. We were both pretty worried that they were going to walk out of there with a loss, and then Tyrese and Paul George decided to turn into prime LeBron and Kyrie. So what are your thoughts on that game, Jacob?
That game, obviously the Sixers were shorthanded with them beat out with Caleb Martin out, McCain and depth, even a Dembonis, their big man depth was just, you know, really depleted, and it was a really good effort from Tyrese Maxey and Paul George. I think throughout the beginning of the season, you know, Paul George's in and out of the lineup. So it was really hard for him and Maxey to kind of gain chemistry. But we've seen these past few weeks in the games Embiid has missed that they've really, like, developed into a solid duo. Because it's with Paul George especially, like, it's all about role for him. And we'll kind of get in his struggles pretty soon. But just with him, like, his role has fluctuated, whether it's being the second option to Maxey or learning how to play along with Embiid. But I feel like that duo has just kind of gained, you know, some chemistry, and now they kind of have a familiarity with each other, and that'll be huge going forward in games that they will miss Embiid, which could be tonight. So I'm excited to see how George and Maxey continue to grow.
I saw a stat after the second of the back-to-back against Charlotte, and it was like 4 of their whatever, like 10 wins at that time, or 9 wins, were against Charlotte. So to me,
it was like
that
37%, yeah.
Yeah, 37% of your wins coming against any team is obviously not good. And then, you know, you add the fact that it's the Hornets. That was rough. And then you go off that back-to-back, you win both games, and then you go and get killed by Cleveland. I mean, 126-99. You can break that game down to start, and we can just kind of move where the conversation takes us.
I think the whole back-to-back, like, I'm not putting that much weight into that game against Cleveland because Embiid didn't play in that game. They're on the second end of a back-to-back against another impressive win against the Hornets. So I want to kind of dive into that real quick because that was Embiid's first game back for a few games. So what I saw from Embiid, Paul George, and Maxey in that game was really solid. You know, him and George looked to be developing some chemistry in the pick and roll, which I think, you know, they should run a lot more of going forward. So, and I think the best way to use Embiid, which we kind of saw in that Charlotte game, was just his ability to just be like a playmaker from the high post, because that doesn't really exert too much energy compared to the years past where he's had to score 35 just to have a chance to win the game. So I think kind of utilizing him in that playmaking role is key. But I think that game was probably more close than it should have been. But like, and the current state the Sixers in as they're trying to crawl back to 500, we'll take any win we can. But another player who's really been impressed me in this stretch that we're talking about is Kelly Oubre Jr., who just continues to be consistent. Yeah, he struggled a bit the past few games, but, you know, overall these past few weeks he's been really solid on both ends of the ball and also just as a back cutting and shooting threat. So we'll need more of that. You know, he's known to be inconsistent at times, but when Embiid's back, he's always usually better, which is the case for a lot of people on this team, including Tyrese Maxey. But to kind of circle back to that Cleveland game, it's kind of a game just kind of like throw away because it was at a lights out shooting performance from Cleveland. I believe they shot 51.2% from downtown. So you're not going to win a game if a team, you know, puts up that type of number. So I'll hand it back to you.
My biggest problem with that Cleveland game compared to the Charlotte game, and I know the circumstances were not ideal. No Embiid. I mean, you're fresh off the back-to-back, whatever. All the circumstances are not ideal, but I feel like it's going to be the same way in the playoffs. Obviously, they don't play back-to-backs in the postseason, but, I mean, you're going to have games where Embiid is really drained. Like, if Cleveland and Philly are playing and it's game 6 of the series, I'm a little worried what Embiid is going to look like at that point. And that's always been the concern, but that's why you went out and got Paul George. So then I'll pull up the box score right now. Paul George against Cleveland finished with 11 points on 4 of 12 shooting. That's actually a pretty good Paul George stat line, which is really sad to say. But I mean, the second game against Charlotte, he played even worse than that. So to me, that's where we can kind of obviously transition into the George struggles. You're paying this guy $212 million a year to do that. I'm not asking for him to score 30 points every night. But the whole purpose of getting a third star is that when Embiid is out, you have someone else who can score 30, and he's just not.
I'll kind of point to that game against the Celtics the other day because his shooting percentage was really just terrible. I think he was 4 of 15 from the field. But the biggest thing for me was his shot selection. I didn't like how like he settled into those mid-range pull-ups like above the break. I thought he killed ball movement a lot of times, but you're gonna need more from him, and especially in games like with the Celtics, like with the playoff like atmosphere. But overall with Georgia, kind of went back to my original point that we started with, is his role is constantly changing more so than anyone else on the team, because he goes from being the sidekick to Tyrese Maxey in games like the Hornets to having to learn how to adjust with Joel Embiid. And I think the best way to utilize him is through pick and rolls, kind of how I mentioned before. I think that he might be underutilized in that role, because when you have him and Embiid in pick and roll, it's kind of like saving George's energy. Like, because at this point in his career, we're not expecting like the elite shot making and like offensive versatility like George provided in Oklahoma City and even the Clippers a few years ago. So that was one of the downsides of giving him this 4-year, $212 million contract, is he's going to regress at some point. And I'm not saying he's washed by any means, because obviously we aren't even in the new year yet and we're on the first year of this deal. But that's definitely one of the things that you really had to think about before handing him such a bag. I think George has been a really good defender. He's provided value as a playmaker, but his scoring, and it's going to have to improve at some point. He said all the right things in like post game conferences, saying like how he knows he'll get his rhythm, but it's time for him to show us at some point. And I hope
Yeah.
that he can kind of establish some rhythm as the team continues to get healthy.
My thing with George is he kind of has played every role throughout his career. He doesn't have the same like athleticism as he did in Indiana. Like, you're number one in Indiana. You go to OKC and you're like 1A, 1B with Russ, really 1A in terms of scoring, because Russ would just play make much more. I mean, they had Carmelo there too to score. And then you go to LA, and LA, his tenure in LA was so interesting to me because Kawhi was always in and out. He would play like as a number one, but then the second Kawhi came back, he didn't look like he had too much trouble adjusting to the number two spot, which is what's kind of worrying to me about what he's doing in Philly. I know he's taken even another step back because now he's going back and forth between the two and the three, but to me, I felt like he always did a decent job with Kawhi of when Kawhi was in and out, being able to switch between in the one and the two. So, like you said, it's time he shows that same ability with the two and the three.
No, yeah, I agree. I think that was one of the biggest selling points for signing George's portability, his ability to, just fit in any single situation. And he has done that to a degree, but it's just the shot making and inefficiency
Of
that's really
course,
been
yes.
worrying me. And I think, with the nagging knee injuries and all that, like it definitely hasn't helped. But obviously we're past that point, and it's just a matter of just poor shot making. But I do like, for the most part, like besides that Boston game, I do like his shot selection. I do like the type of looks he's been getting. It's just a matter of them simply, going in.
Going in. I mean, he's contributing almost everywhere else in the box score, and when you just he passes the eye test outside of scoring, at least in my opinion.
No, for sure. And when anyone says he's the next Tobias, like you just gotta like talk about that, because even on Tobias's worst games, he wasn't putting up 10 rebounds and 8 assists. So.
Exactly. Like, I mean, yes, he looks like Tobias when he's shooting the ball. But to even make that comparison, I mean, I think that's just way overstepping. I'm assuming you would agree.
Yeah, 100%.
But we touched on this last episode. Last episode, Tyrese was in the midst of like that super bad slump, like just taking crazy shots, playing a bunch of hero ball. And then Joel Embiid decides to come back, and Tyrese Maxey turns back into all-star Tyrese Maxey. I'll just let you take it from there.
It's funny you said, because I just wrote a whole article about how he's dominated throughout these past 7 games. And like I said in there, like we throw the term around like gravity a lot, especially with Embiid, but it really is a true thing, because we've seen the night and day difference when Embiid is in and out of the lineup, especially with Tyrese Maxey. Like He just appears so much more decisive, so much more aggressive, and just is kind of letting the game come to him, which is something he really struggled with in this like poor first like 20-ish games of the season. Like we're seeing his ability to just take over as a playmaker and as a scorer. And with that, defenses are kind of, easing up with the double teams a little bit, which has really just allowed Maxey to showcase his perimeter creation. And that perimeter creation, just his ability as a scorer, just has it's just been so important these past two games because he has completely taken over these fourth quarters in the games against San Antonio and Boston. I believe he combined for 25 points in those two quarters of those two games. So just having him just being able to be that shot maker and that 1A scoring option, it's huge for now, but it's also huge for the long term because when Embiid and George inevitably decline, Max is going to be entering his peak. So it's good that he kind of gets adjusted to that role early on.
Yeah, I think what entices me so much about when Embiid comes back, why Maxey thrives so much, is kind of when he does come back. I mean, I'm looking at the Boston box score right now. In that game, Maxey took 23 shots, Embiid took 15. So when you say someone is a number one option, I like that in the Sixers case, that doesn't mean the number one option is taking the most shots. It means the number one option has the most attention on them. I think Maxey almost thrives off of not constantly being in the spotlight. And of course, not having the pressure of playing hero ball. When he has Embiid on the floor with him, that's who the other coach is saying, you need to worry about him. Obviously, Maxey's a concern too, don't get me wrong. But when Joel Embiid is on the floor, your focus is on stopping Joel Embiid. So I think that's when Maxey kind of hits his highs. And the same thing happened in Denver with Jokic. Obviously, not this year, and I love to draw the comparison between Jokic and Embiid, but in past years, the same thing would happen with Jamal Murray. I see it as the exact same situation.
No, yeah, I 100% agree, and I love the fact that you brought up Embiid only took 15 shots in that Boston game because that largely went unnoticed due to Caleb Martin's just absolute heater
Oh,
that we
just
probably should talk about
killing the
right after
Celtics
this.
per usual, yeah.
But no, yeah, like the Sixers being able to beat a team like Boston in such like a competitive Christmas Day environment with Embiid only having to play like 31 minutes and taking 15 shots, that is huge, especially for the playoffs and just for his overall health in general. But I do want to talk about Caleb Martin real quick because through all the ups and downs, like this is the type of performance like that we need for him for the playoffs that he is showing that he can do. So what did you think of Caleb?
In classic pessimist fashion of myself, I'm gonna bring it into a playoff scenario in a 7-game series, and I really do hate to just keep bashing Paul George, but I mean, Caleb, he did sustain this in the 2023 Eastern Conference Finals, I believe it was, in that Boston Heat series. I don't know how confident I am that he can do that again. I think it would be amazing if he could, but at the same time, in that game, George shot 0 of 7 from 3, and Caleb straight up had to make up for that on his own by shooting 7 for 9 from 3. That's not sustainable by any means. So this was a great win. It's a great step in the right direction, and that's the type of X factor that Caleb can be. I write about the Heat for those who don't know, so I've seen Caleb for years now, kind of just have that ability to take over, but then he also has the ability to shoot 2 for 9 and not really be a factor at all.
No, you're 100%. And I think kind of how you said that it's unsustainable for such a situation to happen again. But I think on the positive side that I don't think Paul George shooting 4 of 15 from the field every game is sustainable also. So like there will be
True.
games where hopefully Caleb gets his and shoots like 7 threes like we saw on Wednesday. But hopefully there will also be games that, George can put up an efficient like 24 next to Embiid and Maxey, and that'll make all the difference.
Yeah, that completely good point, honestly. And then I'm just looking down the box score even more. Kelly really didn't play well either in that game. So I think it's like to beat a team like Boston in a series like that, it's going to come down to those X factor guys. I don't think it's going to be the big three that's going to have to win that series. It is going to be those types of performances like Caleb, because on paper, Boston has the better team. I don't think many people would disagree with that. Another interesting point is Drew was out for that game. So obviously, Maxey goes for 33 and 12 on pretty efficient splits, not great from three, but if you add Drew to that mix, I don't know if that game comes out with the same result.
No, yeah, I mean, I think for the Celtics, that's one of the downsides of Mazzulla Ball because you attempt such a high amount of threes. I don't know the
Oh
exact
yeah.
number off the top of my head, but I know they're first in the three-point attempts
Ridiculous
by a
amounts, yeah.
pretty good margin. Yeah, so that's the downside when like the whole team really isn't feeling it. Like you're going to shoot yourself out of games. But then we also see the plus side, like they're winning against the Pacers yesterday, where they put up like 142. So I think yeah, Jrue definitely would have changed things, but still, I think the Sixers would have won that game regardless because Maxey wasn't getting his in isolation. He was kind of getting with
Right.
ball movement and action. So I think it's all about like the context of like which they score. But yeah, overall I would definitely agree. In terms of Oubre, like I think he started off the game, so like he had really good defense on Tatum, but then he's kind of fell off in his like ability to not or inability, I should say, to not shoot threes. Like the Celtics were kind of able to like sag off of him, and that is definitely a big worry on the postseason. And that's why I've been, fairly critical of Kelly Oubre. But kind of like you said, like it's going to come down to the supporting cast. And I talked about this with Sean Bernard the other day. Like the Sixers on Wednesday were able to match up with Celtics in like a way they have in the past few years because all this like two wing, like the length and the versatility they have on the wings, like they were really didn't even have that until like now. And you really saw like both defensively and offensively, like they were able to match like Boston's high volume shooting, and that's what really kept them in the game, especially with Caleb Martin.
I want to transition into something you were very eager to talk about, which is Keon Ellis as a trade target. You seem very enthusiastic about this potential addition, so I'll let you take charge on this.
All right, so there's no, I don't think there's any official talks moving Keon Ellis, but
Yeah.
considering the limited role he's had with the Kings, and the Kings are absolutely, we could spend a whole podcast talking about the disaster of the season that's been for them, but Keon Ellis has played 29 games. He's started in four, but he's found himself in and out of the rotation, even though one of Sacramento's biggest holes is perimeter defense, and he provides just that. I mean, we saw him in the play-in game against the Warriors last season pretty much end a dynasty. Like, obviously, that's an over-exaggeration, but still, like, he is one of the most talented point of attack, perimeter defenders, whatever you want to call it. And the Sixers are somewhat lacking in that department outside of Caleb because we've.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Seeing Kelly Oubre be solid, but again, his defensive motor is very inconsistent. And Keon Ellis is someone who can also shoot the three really well. He's shooting 40.7% from downtown on 3.1 attempts this season, which is amazing. And when you consider he'd be playing next to Embiid's gravity, next to Maxey's gravity, even next to PG's gravity, like he'll get so much great looks. So just having such a young stud of a player on both ends of the floor, it would be amazing. Like, and the Sixers have the draft capital to potentially get him, but again, I don't think Sacramento is like wants to trade him right now, but considering like the inconsistent rollout I mentioned, that it's a possibility.
Just adding another positive factor is the Sixers went really, really old in their backcourt this summer. Reggie and Eric Gordon, neither has worked out. I mean, so you're looking at going in the total opposite direction, which is what I think exactly what they need to do. I think Keon's like 24, so and he's in like his third season. Yeah, there's no reason they shouldn't be going out and going to get him. I wanted to ask you a question, though, just your general thoughts on how Andre Drummond's looked this year. Charles Barkley is someone who's always been so high on Drummond, and like before the season, he even says Drummond's the best backup center in the NBA. It's obviously not been true this far, but just overall, what do you think about him? Is that a, now a position of need where you need to go out and you need to find a new backup for Embiid?
I don't think they should like find a new backup unless like there's a move that involves trading Drummond because Drummond like he hasn't been great, but it's all a matchup thing because obviously someone who gets exploited in pick and roll coverage is a lot. So against teams like the Cavs, he probably wouldn't be the greatest option, especially with Darius Garland the way he's kind of snake dribbles. But on the other hand, he is good against the Cavs as well because of his size. So it's like it's a real situational thing because pick and roll defense is really poor. He's not that great of a finisher despite him having the height advantage on most matchups. He's a good
Yeah.
lob threat, but I feel like he has gotten semi underused in the pick and roll. But often, I mean, he's a great, that's about it. But like Obviously, in the playoffs, you need guys who can be able to hold their own on both ends, and Drummond simply just can't do that. And I think with the versatility they have with Yabusele, like they can go with him at the five. I think that's worked in stretches, like especially against the game with the Celtics. Again, like we saw him and Maxey thrive in that pick and pop type of thing. So it's all matchup based. And if there was like a cheap center, like I can't really think of any off the top of my head that Sixers can get, then maybe go for it. But I don't know. I think with how into Drummond for this 2 year, I think $10 million contract, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I don't think the Sixers are going to address that when they have so many other holes on the roster, like you talked about Eric Gordon and Reggie Jackson. So I think, you know, having another wing, having another just backup card is more important than that position for the time being.
Yeah, I was more or less just playing devil's advocate, and you like hit right where I was going to say in terms of Yabusele and just how impactful he's been, and how I think him and Drummond complement each other as backups really well. Exactly like you said, just based on who they're playing, you go with one or the other. But it still doesn't change the fact that the Sixers aren't even a play-in team right now. They're number 11, right behind the Bulls and the Pistons at the time of recording this, I believe. What do you need to see over the next however many games leading up to the trade deadline to be confident that the Sixers still go all in this year?
I think they still go all in simply because I want to say it, I don't want to jinx it, but it looks like they've gotten all of like the crazy health stuff out of the way. They're 8-3 in their last 11 games. Yeah, fingers crossed. But as of right now, if they play the Jazz and they win, they'll probably be in the 10th seed. But that can only work if the Bulls lose to the Bucks, which is a very good chance of happening because
Yeah.
Dame is playing tonight. I believe Giannis is out, but still, with Dame, I think they can beat a team like Chicago. So even now, tonight, if everything goes right, they can be right back in the playing picture. And when you look at the Sixers' upcoming schedule, they have a lot of very winnable games that they, in a perfect world, could go undefeated in. Because after the Jazz, you have Portland on Monday. And then in the new year, you have Sacramento, Golden State, Brooklyn. Then you even have Phoenix, which is a winnable game, but still, that'll be a close one. Wizards, the Pelicans, like you have all these teams that you could really just kind of take advantage of. And before you know it, if all things go considered, if they can, you know, stay healthy, they could be right back above 500, maybe even a game or two. So it's just about, you know, kind of taking advantage of this stretch. Like there's really no room for error at this point, even though we're already in January, because the East, while it is relatively weaker to the West, like the Sixers have dug themselves into a pretty sizable hole. I think, you know, getting maybe the third or fourth seed is unattainable at this point. But if all things go smoothly, I can definitely see them maybe getting that 5-7 range. Think this out of the plan throughout these whole circumstances, that'll be an absolute miracle. But no, I think they should go all in simply because of the fact that at this point, like you've won so many games in a row that you're not going to go tank back down to get someone like Cooper Flagg. Like even like how we mentioned last time, their pick has protection on it. So I just think they have to go all in, especially because what we see from Paul George, what we've seen from Joel Embiid injury wise, like they're not getting any younger. So you really have to take advantage of every year you get.
Yeah, and my hope more is if they do play well leading up to the deadline, is that Daryl Morey doesn't get too comfortable and say, I mean, Daryl Morey always says his roster is never finished. So I'm not too concerned about it, but my hope is that, KJ's been playing amazing. KJ Martin has been such a strong contributor. And I am starting to come to the team of, you might not need to trade him, but Daryl Morey also can't see a player like, I don't know, Dorian Finney-Smith on the trade market and not at least throw something out there just because you've been winning games. If there is an upgrade that can be made, even though other guys have been playing well, you still need to make the upgrade, in my opinion.
I'd argue that I'd trade Kelly before I trade KJ in the DFS deal, to be quite honest, because you have to think about what they offer. Because Kelly Oubre
Right.
is someone who can't shoot three well. He's inconsistent as a finisher. Like, I'm not trying to bash on Kelly Oubre. Like, I can praise him at being in the podcast, but
Of
he's
course,
proven
yeah.
to be inconsistent. And, you know, with the way that they sag off him, that'll lose you a playoff series. Like, so, and Oubre's defensive inconsistencies, like, you have to think about playoff basketball. You have to think about ceiling raising players if you're trying to win now. And KJ Martin, like you said, he's been fantastic. He's fit so well next to Embiid to that four position. Like I even mentioned earlier this week, like the Sixers really haven't had a chance to pair Embiid with an athletic four like KJ, like ever in his tenure. So KJ's ability to be the help defender, that guy that kind of comes crashing from the weak side, swatting shots and all that, like he's just thrived in that role. And it sucks that, you know, he's got injured and he potentially may not play until, you know, the January, I think January 15th, where he's able to be
Yeah,
available for
15.
trade. Yeah, so that whole thing is unfortunate, but DFS 3-and-D win, I would definitely trade Oubre instead of KJ. But who knows if the Nets say yes to that? They probably have to add pick into there. But
I was about to say, I don't know. Like, if KJ keeps raising his value like this, Brooklyn might get to a point where they say, look, you either give us KJ or we go take him elsewhere. So they might be left with no choice. But yeah, I have to see how the next month plays out for me to know who to trade. But I want to preview slash predict a little bit of tonight's game. They're taking on Utah 9:30. Some injuries on both sides, honestly. What are your thoughts about this game tonight?
I think it's a very, even if the Jazz are fully healthy, I think it's a very winnable game. The Jazz do not have a good defense whatsoever. Like, they just don't. So the Sixers can definitely exploit that, especially with Tyrese Maxey's ability to get inside and create for others as well as for himself. And I think we've seen with Paul George, he's very good against bad teams. Like, you look at all these games against the Hornets this
Charlotte,
season.
yep.
So, yeah. Like, I'm just expecting a solid game for him tonight. I think something around the 25-point range. I mean, that's probably if Embiid doesn't play, but Embiid is also questionable, like you said, with a foot injury, probably because of that insane fall, which we forgot to bring up during the Celtics game, where he tripped over
Oh,
the most
the
Embiid thing I've ever
security
seen in
guard,
my life.
yes.
Yep.
Oh my
So yeah, he's
goodness.
questionable. Eric Gordon's questionable, but that really won't change much. But yeah, there's injuries on both sides. But the Jazz are a very mediocre basketball team offensively as well. They're 21st in points per game. They're 14th in 3-point percentage. But you know what does worry me? I'm worried they'll get some magnet ball game because I watched the Jazz Blazers game last night. Not last night, other night, but Svi Mykhailiuk was lighting the Blazers up. I think he finished with like 6 threes or something crazy like that. So as long as there's no crazy outlier 3-point
Of
performances from the
course, yeah.
Jazz, this is a very, very winnable game because, like you said, they're also very shorthanded as well. And they're just not that great of a team. They have a bunch of, just very young prospects, but also vets who don't really, raise the floor too much.
Look, when you first said 25, I thought you were talking about the margin of victory, not PG stat line. And the more I thought
Oh,
about it,
no.
the more I was like, yeah, that's not Sixers basketball, but you were talking about PGs. I completely agree. Like, even if Utah was at full strength, it's the Jazz. The Jazz are in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. They're not looking to win a championship. But I just have to rant about Lauri Markkanen for a second. I
Gotcha.
love this guy. I thought he was the best thing. I wanted so any contending team. I was just dying to see this guy on a contender because he's 7 foot.
Apparently,
He's
Pozemski was
basically.
too valuable.
Yeah, now look at him too. But I think I'm disappointed Laurie's taken a step back this year. I know like other guys have taken a scoring leap, but dude, you're supposed to be the number one option on this team, taking the most shots. Not like the Embiid situation. You are taking the most shots. You should be. You're 7 feet tall. You can shoot 40% from outside. I'm just disappointed in the way he's played this year. I still want him to be on a contender, but I thought this was the year that he took even another step, personally.
I'd be
But
lying if I said, oh, sorry.
no, you're good. Go ahead.
But no, like, I'd be lying if I said, like, I was completely locked into the Jazz all season. But obviously, I've been keeping up, but not like as closely as other teams. I think he has been injured for a decent stretch
Right.
because he had that lower back thing and he had back spasms, missed a few games, but that was obviously back in October. But yeah, he hasn't been the same, like, deadly shooter we've seen. 19.6 points per game. He's
Right.
shooting 44% from the field, 38.2% from three on 7-4 attempts. So not terrible, but obviously, given his situation, he really isn't in a good like situation to thrive like he would have been if the Warriors would have traded Brandon Podziemski. Like,
Wish.
yeah, like that would have been crazy offensive system, but he's still rotting in Utah. Danny Ainge will get his value for Lauri eventually, but yeah, like he's not in a great situation. The Jazz aren't a good team. And kind of going back to the Sixers aspect of it, like, their defense is really going to get shredded by Maxey, I believe. Like, Maxey and Paul George are going to have a field day because the Jazz really don't have that great of a point of attack defender because they really don't. And they don't have great rim protection either. John Collins has been solid. He's taken a really big leap, like kind of like how you mentioned other players have stepped up. But yeah, like, this really isn't that great of a basketball team at all.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Sexton is a high energy guy, but he's not like that lockdown perimeter defender you're looking for. I want to wrap up today's episode by talking about a former Sixer, Jimmy Butler. Gosh, he's always making headlines for something, but now it's, he has all these preferred destinations. He wants to trade out. Pat Riley comes out and says, "No, we're not trading you." Just where do your general thoughts lie on what's going on with him, and where do you think he's going to end up after February 6th?
I think the whole thing was funny with the Pat Riley thing because just because they say they're not going to trade him, that was, in my opinion, you probably know more than me because you cover them, but in my opinion, that was just kind of like to ease the distraction of the whole thing. So I think the Heat's goal with that was to definitely just kind of say, like, we're not trading him, focus on winning basketball games, focus on,
Settle everything. Yep,
exactly.
exactly.
Yeah, but I do think we'll eventually get traded because I even read a report that said he should have traveled with the team to the Atlanta Hawks game that they're currently playing, and he is just not there. So I just don't think there's any way this ends well. I think for me, I would love to see him in Golden State for sure, because you consider the Warriors
Trust.
have, after a 12-3 start, they are now 500. They have looked really mediocre offensively. It takes a Curry masterclass just for the offense to stay afloat. So I would definitely, I think it would be interesting, but I think the fit would definitely be interesting. But like, I would love to, have him there. I think Houston's another really good destination too. Phoenix and Dallas don't make too much sense for me, to be quite honest.
Yeah, with Phoenix, it's the whole Beal contract thing
Yeah,
that's just
exactly.
too hard to work around. Dallas, it's just the Heat wouldn't take their return, to be quite honest with you. Dallas doesn't really have enough. And
They'd have to
then,
trade Kyrie.
yeah, pretty much. Like, and why would they ever do that?
Yeah. And the same thing
But
with Phoenix. Like, it will be great for the Suns, but does Miami want Bradley
it
Beal?
makes no sense for
Even if he
Miami.
lifted
No,
that no trade
no
clause, yeah.
chance. Yeah, no chance. But I agree. I think the Warriors is where he should end up. I'm not saying he will or won't. I couldn't tell you what goes on in Pat Riley's mind every day, to be honest with you, covering the Heat. It's like something new happens every day. Golden State, to me, I was so critical of them, even when they were like dominating and they were top of the West, because it's Curry and a bunch of like they were playing what, like a 11, 12 man rotation at one point. That was never sustainable. And I had always said they needed more star power to make any sort of
I
run.
agree 100%.
And now it's catching up to them. So that's kind of where my general thoughts lay. A Sixers reunion is not going to happen, as much as I would love to see that. Get just up a nice little Paul George for Jimmy Butler swap would work wonders, in my opinion, for the Sixers, but I think that would be great. Not that Miami would ever do that, but
Yeah, I think kind of going back to the Warriors real quick before I think talk about a George Butler swap. I think the thing is, like, I saw the beauty in having an 11 or 13 man rotation, but the downside of that, which I also thought of at the time, was there's no really opportunity to establish chemistry and establish solid rotation just because you have so many guys playing so many different minutes. Like, it's just Steph Curry and a bunch of solid movement shooters, which in theory will work, but like you said, there needs to be a certain level of star power for that team to remain afloat when Curry's having an off night or defenses are kind of scheming against him, whatever. But back to a Paul George, Jimmy Butler thing, like obviously, like you said, it's very far. It's not going to happen. Like it's not NBA 2K, but I don't know. Like I see both sides of wanting, like if in this crazy hypothetical world where Paul George would be traded to the Heat, like I see positives in it because theoretically, at fit wise, Paul George is the better fit, but also Jimmy Butler is just a much better playoff performer. He would kind of fill that hole of being a facilitator and being someone who can kind of attack the paint while Maxey can thrive off the ball. And we know what Embiid and Jimmy Butler can do already. There's no point going into that. Like they were amazing together. So yeah, I think there's pluses and negatives because you would have to give up all your draft capital to give up to acquire Jimmy, and he's also someone who's aging quite a bit. So it's a good bad mix of both. But yeah, I don't really think there is too much value in talking about it, kind of like you said, because this is not happening.
I would kill to live in that fairy tale world, but I mean a lot's gonna go down in the next 2 months. I think we're good to wrap up the episode there, unless you have any final thoughts, Jacob.
Nope, just beat Jazz tonight. That's all I ask.
Yeah, seriously. Let's hope for the best. Thank you all for watching episode 2 of the 76 Reasons podcast. Stay tuned for more coming soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.